Before going into the Bible study proper today, I have got a few news items that I think will be worthwhile covering. There's been a fairish amount in the news. There's this advert that appeared. I can't show you over the internet, but but there's this advert that appeared for a Channel 4 program, which was on IVF treatment. And well, it's not IVF treatment. It was basically homosexual parenting. And after that advert actually appeared, we're also looking at a review that actually occurred in the paper, in the Telegraph, called "It's a Dad, Dad World." And in this particular review, it says Channel 4's timely new two-part series, "Making Babies the Gay Way," began with a few vox props, with obviously non-intellectuals made remarks like, "I can't imagine two puffs bringing up a kid," and so on. It goes on, it says, Tony, a millionaire businessman, and his partner Barry first hit the headlines a few years ago when they used an American technique banned in Britain to fertilize a carefully chosen donor egg with their sperm. And after that, as the narrator starkly put it, they rented the womb of another woman for 9 months, and the result was twins, a boy and a girl, that they've been bringing up full-time. With a full-time nanny to provide a female influence. The big finish last night was the birth of the third child. This time the womb was supplied by Donna, a cheery California with a supportive husband and desire to help gay blokes. And on it goes in this particular review. But the interesting thing is, this review is positive towards what's going on here. So they're actually having children being brought into the world, being brought up by two fathers, they're fathers in that sense. It says, in the end, it seems that the heterosexual couple, gay ones, like heterosexual couples, gay ones have children of all sorts of reasons. Unlike heterosexual couples, however, they never had them by accident. So in other words, it almost gives the impression that they're even better than a heterosexual family. And this is destroying the society that we find ourselves in. Another one again in this, just this past week now, donor children to be given rights to know their parents' identities, and in the same area it says lesbians want families just like everybody else. We all want to give children the best start in life, and a lesbian couple or a single woman is just as qualified at providing a stable, supportive upbringing. Well, that's not true. You've got a male and a female, and the two are meant to go together, and they're designed to fit together. And they're designed to fit together not just physically but mentally as well, and in the way that God has actually structured things, that is the way that he is determined. It's interesting, if you just go over to Second Peter chapter 2, because what's happening is it's this lifestyle, as they term it, is in fact being actively promoted. It's being actually pushed today, which is something you didn't find previously. But in 2 Peter chapter 2, in verse 1, it says, "There were also false prophets among the people, and false teachers among you who would bring in damnable heresies, denying the Lord that brought them. And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth should be even spoken of." Now notice what it says. The way of truth, then, is evil spoken of. It's a case that the actual positive side is going to be looked down on, and this is what happened within Sodom, and this is happening within our society. There is a move, as we'll go on. I'll just comment a little bit further. He then gives a series of examples of it says, and through covetous. "For if God spared not," verse 4, "the angels that sinned," "for if God spared not the angels that sinned," and verse 5, "and spared not the old world, save Noah," and verse 6, "and turned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemning them with an overthrow, making them an example for those that should live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conduct of the wicked, and for that righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day in his unlawful deeds, then," it says, "the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of trials, and to reserve the unjust to the day of judgment to be punished." It's a very long sentence structure, as all of Paul's writings are. But it's interesting here that Lot talks about how he's actually vexed about the situation that he finds himself in, and we are finding ourselves in the same situation And we must realize that, as it says in this passage, that if God has spared not the angels that sinned, he didn't spare the old world, he turned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, then he knows how to deliver the godly out of trials and reserve the unjust to the day of judgment. This will in fact inevitably come. But in the meantime, as I said, the way of truth is evil spoken of, as it says in verse 2. Here we find police headline, police ban marriage questions for the fear of hurting the gays. It says police officers have been warned not to ask people if they're married in case it causes offence to homosexuals. It was closed yesterday. This directive is included in the new guidelines, which also instruct officers not to call elderly people old, use the term homosexual, or refer to women as pet, love, or dear. So they're all, it's all just bundled in together in this kind of politically correct language. To give you an example, however, this one came from Mr. Munro that he'd found on the internet. And it says, an evangelical Christian assaulted by onlookers who took offense to his sign calling for an end to homosexuality was, quote, properly convicted, unquote, of a criminal offense, Britain's High Court has ruled. So this, the actual person who dared to hold a placard up was actually convicted of an offence within the UK. Defenders of the late Harry Hammond, 69, argued Tuesday the April 2002 conviction interfered with his freedom of religion and right to free expression, the London Telegraph reported. But the two-judge panel said that Hammond's behaviour went beyond legitimate protest. Legal advocate Hugh Tomlinson appeared for Hammond's executors, described the scene of the October 2001 protest in Bournemouth, England. He said about 30 or 40 angry people gathered around Hammond as he held a sign that said, stop immorality, stop homosexuality, stop lesbianism. That was the sign. And he had a reference to Jesus on the actual sign. There was a struggle, Tomlinson said, and Hammond himself was subject to a number of assaults. Soil was thrown at him and water poured over his head. Somebody tries to seize the sign and was knocked to the ground, but there was no suggestion that he physically assaulted anybody. He was the victim of the assault, not the perpetrator. Nevertheless, Hammond was arrested for breach of the peace. He was charged and convicted under the 1986 Public Order Act for displaying a sign which was, quote, threatening, abusive, or insulting within the sight of a person likely to be called harassment, alarm, or distress. I think that is scandalous, absolutely scandalous. And Hammond was fined about £300 and ordered to pay £395 in legal costs. As I say, we are looking at active homosexuality being promoted within the society, and we shouldn't be surprised at such things, and we are going to finally find ourselves in caught up with this. I mean, it's almost inevitable that this will happen, because it's going to go further. If the time goes on, it will carry on, it will go further. To give you an example again, in this light, going through just this week's papers, they're also talking here about a lesbian couple having a baby with a £1,365 sperm bought on the internet. So that was one there. Another one, IVF for single women. The father's not necessary. Single and lesbian women would be given the same rights as to IVF treatment as heterosexual couples under proposals for the Human Fertilization and Embryology Authority. The authority which regulates fertility treatments is calling for a change in the law that requires any woman who wants a baby to provide a father figure. So they're saying, no, you don't need to provide a father figure. And yet, as I say, male and female are designed not just physically, they're designed mentally to fit together as well. Fertility chief's contempt for cloning doctor. There's this particular lady called Sue Leather, who's head of the... let's see, what's she actually head of? The Human Fertility, this Embryology Authority. She criticizes the people that are trying to clone children, but she is wholly in favor of this IVF for single women. And yet at the same time, within the paper, there was an article written by a doctor that is seeing, this is a GP now, and it says, the worst child abusers in the country have been successive British governments. They've done everything in their power by means of social reform and fiscal policies to promote the very circumstances in which child abuse and neglect are most likely to take place. He who says single parenthood, at least in Britain, says he says moral, spiritual, and emotional degradation, squalor. Sorry, let me read that again. He who says single parenthood, at least in Britain, says moral, spiritual, and emotional degradation, squalor, and deprivation. He who promotes single parenthood is indifferent to the fate of children. This is his view that is being expressed, and it is true based on his analysis of the cases that he come through his practice. It says, Miss Leather is one of those who think that the social trends she no doubt approves of are self-justifying. It's absolutely clear, she says, that if you think about the changes in society and the different ways that families can be constituted, that it is anarchistic for the law to include the statement about the needs of a father. That is to say, if enough people do something, it's right, and the law should lend its authority to it. If you think about it, it is absolutely clear that the changes in the rate of burglary over the past 50 years mean that it's anarchistic to lock your door or expect the police to do anything about it when your house is broken into. In other words, you should just basically accept that, because obviously burglary's gone up, and therefore you should go ahead and just accept the burglars. And this is the point. If we turn over to Exodus 22, in Exodus 22, we find here in Exodus 22 a way of looking at the fatherless and the widow. And it says in verse 22, it says, Exodus 22, verse 22, you shall not afflict any widow or fatherless child, and neither should we afflict a widow or a fatherless child. If you will afflict them in any way, and they cry at all unto me, I will surely hear their cry. And my wrath shall wax hot, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall be widows, and your children fatherless. So what it's talking about here, it's talking about where the father has died, or whatever, and there's a widow and a fatherless child. So it is, you know, people read that and think, oh, well, this is fine. You know, we can go ahead and we can have single parents. But that's not the way it is. Turn over to Deuteronomy 23. Within the same law of God in Deuteronomy 23, we find another section. There we go. Deuteronomy 23, it says in verse 2, it says, a bastard, that's somebody who is born out of wedlock, shall not enter into the congregation of the Eternal, even to the tenth generation shall he not enter into the congregation of the Eternal. Now, it may be talking to something, probably referring to something to do with incest. That's been muted about this particular term, but I don't think so. So this idea of single parenthood being promoted is the problem. It is a problem to God. It is not something, therefore, if somebody is a single parent, it's not something that should be, if we go ahead and start to make a difference in that sense and not help, then, you know, that other verse back in Exodus 22 applies. You know, we've got to do what we can to help. But it is not God's way. It's not the way of the Eternal. At the same time, as you have this kind of thing going on in the Western world, over in the Arabic world, there's another world news on the 22nd of this week, of this month. It says, unveiled women are the root of all evil, says this cloudy cleric. Saudi Arabia's most senior Islamic cleric has condemned women who mingle unveiled among men at a business conference this week, saying their actions could cause evil and catastrophe. And he goes on into this way that, you know, you basically, women and men should not mix at all, and they should therefore wear the veil if that is the case. Now, you know, that's simply, you've got this on the one side in this society, in this world, and on the other side you have this other way of doing things. And neither, you know, does anybody ever have anything that is right. And we're looking at a rise of a European Union and a European power in the world that seems to have the Catholic Church as its primary motivating religious force within it. And it says here that the synod is to debate the Pope's supremacy, and the Church of England is to be is being asked to take its biggest step towards accepting the primacy of the Pope and the concept of infallibility since Henry VIII broke from Rome 450 years ago. A joint Roman Catholic and Anglican report arguing that the Pope should be recognized as the universal primate is to be debated by the General Synod next month. So we're looking at this rise that is taking place, the acceptance of the Pope's supremacy. And we're looking at that rising at the same time as you're seeing a Western world that is becoming more immoral, doing things which are, or supporting things which are actually undermining the family, which is the basis of the society, the basis of the of a stable society. Again, these are all signs of the times and things that we should be keeping an eye on in that regard. Now, as far as America is concerned, I've given a number of scenarios in the past few weeks, talking about how it could be that the America succumbs, really, to, well, it could be terrorism, it could be various things. But one area that we need to keep an eye on is the runaway debt that is in America at the moment. That is very serious. Again, from this last week, it says, Bush under fire over runaway spending. President George Bush is facing mounting anger from the conservative right, who accuse him of letting government spending run out of control. 40 Republican congressmen have formed a rebel group committed to curbing federal spending, and the move followed an attack on Mr. Bush and the Republican-dominated Congress by the six conservative think tanks and pressure groups in Washington over the surge in his spending projects. So, another comment by the Daily Telegraph, it says, Mr. Bush, tighten your purse strings. And it says the decline of the dollar is trading at around $1.84 to the pound last night, down 4 cents so far this week, is a dark cloud in a generally clear economic sky. If its fall becomes disorderly, the economic weather will change for the worse. Inflation could take off and interest rate rise around the world. Stock markets, which are up by more than a third since their low point last March, may also sell off suddenly. And it's being driven down by many things, not least the fact that America has the lowest interest rates in the world. Now, certain things are taking place. Another one came through from Mr. Munro here. Greenspan admits the deficit could run out of control. It said Alan Greenspan, the chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve, tried yesterday to downplay the size of America's trade imbalances, but admitted it was difficult to tell whether the current account deficit has spiraled out of control. And as European leaders who blame the deficit for the dollar's recent dive called upon the European Central Bank to cut interest rates, as Mr. Greenspan acknowledged the weak greenback had already put considerable pressure on European exporters. So what is happening at the moment is obviously that as the dollar weakens, so their exports become cheaper in the rest of the world. But what can happen if we're not careful is that if there is a run on the dollar, then you can lead to absolutely catastrophic inflation within America. I mean, inflation such as you saw in Argentina. I mean, Argentina was quite a major exporting country, not that many years ago, but they had an enormous inflation, spiraling inflation, you know. And Germany, I mean, Germany at the end of the First World War, the inflation rate there was just phenomenal. You know, it changed from I don't know what the starting rate was. Was it 1 to 1? Four marks to the dollar, and it went up to something like, was it 2.5 million?
Billion.
2,500,000 in a matter of about a year, something like that, or, you know, a relatively short space of time. And you know, that basically means your currency is worthless. Any savings that you have is totally gone. You're looking at and this then puts pressure on other currencies as well, and everything starts to just basically disintegrate. Another article here from the Sunday Times, it says years before the Asian financial crisis of 97, many Asian countries had become hooked on a dangerous concept, which was credit. Now, this was the financial crisis, if you remember, back in 97. It was, you know, a relatively minor one. Says the odd thing this year is the United States, once the world's biggest creditor nation, is also expecting a credit-fueled consumer spending spree. This has led to a massive current account deficit of more than $500 billion. A far cry from the 10 years ago when the US enjoyed a trade surplus of $82 billion. It says, what will a plunge, if a plunge actually occurs? And they call it, a New York Times column said that the US economy was approaching a Wile E. Coyote moment, when the coyote in the famous Roadrunner cartoon runs off the edge of the cliff, only to realize in the last minute, too late, that he's about to plunge to the bottom. And he says, what will this plunge look like? It will certainly involve a sharp fall of the dollar and the sharp rise in the interest rates, he wrote. In a worst-case scenario, the government's access to borrowing will be cut off, creating a cash crisis that throws the nation into chaos. So again, we need to be aware that this is a possibility. The kind of people, however, and this is where it starts getting prophetically significant, the people who will be affected by this would particularly be the Chinese. The Chinese yuan, apparently, which has been pegged or fixed at a constant rate to the US dollar, needs to be revalued to a stronger level, perhaps as much as 20%. It says, for a long time, market watchers said that the unit was undervalued at around 8.3 to the US dollar, leading to a massive $100 billion trade surplus with America, a quarter of the US total trade deficit. A quarter of the deficit is to one country, China. Now, you know what prophetically we're looking at in China? China, we're looking at the emergence of a superpower that will finally, you know, it'll finally come across to Armageddon. And you're looking, you've got to, the way that the army in Joel is described, you're looking at something almost like spider-like creatures, machines. Running on the walls or climbing in windows. It's a new weaponry we haven't seen yet, almost. It says, it's not a matter of if, but when. Mr. Chan, the head of Asian research in the forecast, a London-based research firm, told the Straits Times. The effect of a yuan appreciation, however, would be fairly significant. Close to 200,000 state-owned enterprises, which are less efficient at producing exports than private firms, would suffer, leading to heavy job losses. Okay, now what happened in post-war or pre-war Germany? Basically the same kind of thing. It was because of this problem, this huge inflation, and the problems that they had, that they started to put them into munitions, and they started to produce munitions. Now, with 200,000 enterprises, and what are these enterprises? They are the technologically advanced, I say advanced, the production world for the motherboards of this world, of the computer chips and so on. These are the industries that we're looking at. We're looking at a militarism. It says, ultimately, whether the US dollar would, in Mr. Cringham's words, offer a Wile E. Coyote moment depends on investor confidence. For a long time, Asian central banks have thought that the purchase of low-yield US Treasury bonds have been the key financiers of American deficits. Currently, US Federal Reserve holds about $1.1 trillion of such debt for foreign central banks, many of them Asian. And therein lies what could be called the Harvey Norman effect, whereby a seller makes credit readily available to a buyer so the latter can buy more. As French economist Jacques Rouff said, if I have an agreement with my tailor that whatever money I pay him returns to me the very same day as a loan, I'd have no objection in order more suits from him. So the key, when another crisis of confidence hits US markets, foreign lenders, particularly Asian lenders to the US, might pull the plug on the US loans. That would be the crucial tipping point to which brings the whole house of cards that is the world economy crashing down, just like the unsuspecting coyote. So it is a serious position that we find ourselves in this particular area. Be aware, I don't know whether I'm going to have time to we can go and read that. Revelation 13, over in Revelation chapter 13. In Revelation 13, it says in verse 17, it says, in verse 16, he causes all, small, great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hands and their foreheads, the way they think and how they work, that no man may buy or sell, except he have the mark or the name of the beast and the number of his name. It's to do with trade. It's to do with the Sabbath, which is the only commandment regarding trade. And it says here is wisdom, let him count the number of the beast. And if you go over to Revelation 18, in Revelation chapter 18, again we see this rising power within the European bloc, which is, say, you're looking at China rising also, which will finally end up in Armageddon. But we're looking at the Western world being taken over ultimately by this rising European conglomerate of nations, which will take the world by surprise. But in Revelation 18, notice in verse 11, it says, "The merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her." This is at the when the beast power is attacked by presumably the communist hordes. "For no man buys their merchandise anymore, the merchandise of gold and silver and precious stone and pearls," and it says cinnamon and odors and ointments and the bodies and slaves and souls of men. "The fruits the souls left after her departed," verse 15, "the merchants of these things which were made rich by her will stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing." So they will see this this system that is come crashing down. It's alas, that great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones. "For in 1 hour so great riches have come to nothing, and every shipmaster and all the company of ships and sailors, and many trade by sea, stood afar off and cried when they saw the smoke of the burning, saying, what city is like to this?" So this beast power will in fact finally come crashing down. Now, one thing that is quite interesting, and one thing that's going on at the moment, this is coming in the Globe and Mail update. It says Calgary OPEC, it says, is considering a move away from using the US dollar and to the euro to set its price targets for crude oil, the highest profile manifestation of the debilitating effects of the depreciation of the greenback standing as the currency of international commerce. Several members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries are seeking formal talks on using the euro as well as the US dollar when determining price targets for crude, a senior oil minister within the cartel said Monday. "There are countries that are proposing this. Venezuela's oil ministers said that in Caracas it's out there under discussion." And it goes on about how this this is something which they're looking at because of the dollar's instability at this present time. There's another one here. This is actually going back November 13th, 2003. It says that the US government would like to see the dollar weaker against the currencies, but it says in here, it says, "The euro is the only real alternative to the dollar, and recognizing the window of opportunity that a US weak dollar policy has presented to it, the EU is now making a political push to fix a more sustainable position of strength for the euro in global trade and savings." It goes on, it says, "As people become more convinced of the strength of the euro relative to the dollar, savings are being switched, and the cost of services, everything from restaurant bills to apartment rentals, are increasingly being benchmarked against the euro. Switching some export revenues away from dollars to euros would therefore make sense." Now, if you're switching all this stuff across from dollars to euros, what are you going to do? You're going to present your dollar at the American bank and say, "Now give us euros instead." And it's going to push the dollar further and further down. It's going to make it worse, because they've got all these loans out and they haven't got the collateral, ready collateral to back them up. Several times in history, OPEC has discussed the idea of pricing some exports in currencies other than the dollar, but mainly because of opposition from Saudi Arabia, this idea has never got beyond the initial discussions. Saudi Arabia can less afford now to be seen as strongly supportive of the United States. Now, there is a problem there, because, as he goes on, he says, "And the growth of Islamic nationalism, led by Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir Mohamad, has again brought this issue to the table. So far, there's little enthusiasm from Arab oil producers, but should Russia adopt a euro export policy, then OPEC, which can more easily impose political decisions on its oil industry, could follow suit." So we're looking at certain things in that area that are taking place. We just turn over, just briefly with me, just to Psalm 83, an area that we need to be keep aware of in Psalm 83. And I'd like to just, if I can just get the, there's an article I came across in The Plain Truth of 1980. It was written by Keith Stump, but it was under the direction of Mr. Armstrong, called The Arab World in Prophecy. And he brings in here, he starts talking about Psalm 83, and it says, keep not you silent, O God, hold not your peace, and do not be still, O God. For lo, your enemies make a tumult, and those that hate you have listed up the head. They have taken crafty counsel against your people, and consulted against your hidden ones. They have said, come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. And who bears the name of Israel? It's Britain and America. It's America and the British people, the speaking peoples, the Anglo-Saxon peoples. For they have consulted together with one consent, they are confederate against you. Now notice what the confederation is. The tabernacles of Edom. Now, if I can just go through Edom, you're looking at Esau, or modern-day Turkey, and it probably extends into Kazakhstan and this area there. The Ishmaelites of Moab and the Hagarenes. Now, you're looking at the Ishmaelites of probably Saudi Arabia. Moab, part of Jordan. The Hagarenes, anciently these people dwelt in the land known as Syria today. So it's all this area in the Middle East we're talking about. Gebel and Ammon and Amalek. Gebel in Lebanon, Ammon, modern Jordan, Amalek, part of the Turks, the Philistines, the modern Palestinian Arabs, the inhabitants of Tyre, which is Lebanon. And notice it says Asser is also joined with them. That is the Assyrian. That is Germany. They're a confederate with this group of people. Now you need to understand that it's not going to be all the time. You're not looking at it existing right on into the time when Europe rises. It'll exist before Europe rises, this confederation, this agreement between them. And then when Europe rises, remember what happens? The king of the north goes down against the king of the south. And again, as the article brings out here, that happened, yes, back in the Second World War as a type. But it looks as if it's going to happen again just right before the end, where the beast power will actually go against this confederation, which it has been confederated with previously. Be aware of these things. Be aware of the again, this was written in 1980, and it was written under the direction when Mr. Armstrong was around. So be aware of it. Be aware of this prophecy in Psalm 83. Be aware that we're looking now at the OPEC moving the price of its oil into euros. We're looking at something along the lines of Psalm 83. And we're also looking at the pressure on China. You're looking at 200,000 state industries. What are they going to do with those industries, with all the people that are working there? You look at the way in which Germany happened after the First World War and the Second World War. You can see the various points coming together, and it is something that we need to continually be watching, being alert to. It's not something that you can kind of stop and say, oh, now I understand it all. We don't understand it all. We've got to watch as we go along. If we're not watching carefully as we go along, reading the prophecies and putting the current situation into focus, we will, you know, it'll come across us unawares. We've got to watch as it goes along.